A very good evening and welcome to Behind the News, a program that analyzes issues of national importance. My name is Ibrahim Kwarteng, and tonight, District Assemblies indicted for massive cash irregularities in 2012. Auditor General's report, what sanctions can be applied to them to stem a repeat of the problem? Why is Sisala West still registering poor BC results? We will hear from some key players on how to reverse this sad state of affairs. Some NDC youth not happy with delaying constitutional reforms in their party. What is their concern? But before we begin, let's go to Barbara Otu for the rest of some of the stories we have.
Thank you very much, Ibrahim. The First Lady, Mrs. Lordina Mahama, has called for more investment in the health sector. She has particularly advocated the need for special attention to be given to child and maternal health. Mrs. Mahama said this when she joined children at the Princess Marie Louise Children's Hospital in a party as part of the Christmas festivities. The event also provided the opportunity for the hospital's authority to call for more doctors. Government has reiterated its commitment to empower the private sector to enable it to play its role as the engine of growth. It has therefore called for an increased partnership between the state and the sector in the interest of the nation. The Greater Accra Regional Minister Julius Debra said this at the opening of a Kente exhibition in Accra. And the Ghana Journalists Association has expressed worry over the dominance of political issues in the media at the expense of pressing national issues. The association has therefore asked journalists to focus more on issues that are dear to the lives of the ordinary person, such as health and education. The president of the GJA, Dr. Roland Afelmoni, said this at the launch of the Health Agenda newspaper in Accra.
Our text line is 02-666-7750. Before we look at our main stories, let's pick something from the Ghana Trades Union Congress on the Merchant Bank sale saga. The sale of Merchant Bank by government has hit a sour note when, after several deliberations and arguments, the lot fell on Fortis Equity Fund. The case, which is now at the Commercial Court in Accra, would be determined on the 18th of this month. Today, Alliance for Accountable Governance, AFAG, held a news conference where it accused the TUC of compromising itself on the SNIT board, thereby allowing the sale of Merchant Bank to Fortis. But is there any substance in AFAG's accusations? We presently have on the line the Secretary General of the TUC, Kufi Asamoah, to tell us the Labour Union's position on this whole Merchant Bank sale saga. Mr. Asamoah, you're welcome.
Thank you, and good evening to your listeners.
Right. Mr. Asamoah, you've been accused of compromising yourself on the SNIT board, thereby allowing the sale of Merchant Bank to Fortis. Have you really compromised yourself on the board?
Oh, it's unfortunate if anybody would draw that conclusion, because SNIT board, yes, the SNIT board has representation from the TUC and the other labor organizations. Indeed, four labor reps are on the SNIT board together with the rest. Any decision taken at the SNIT board goes into what would be to the best interest of the fund. So, yes, that decision has been taken in terms of the state. Ultimately, Bank of Ghana is to do some due diligence to it. But it's important that people get themselves informed of what SNIT is going through. It appeared what AFAG was saying, they are not even aware of the level of reforms that are going through at the level of the SNIT board. It is a fund. It's a pensions fund. So what it tries to do is that if it puts money in a place and then the money is not yielding the kind of returns, it keeps on changing its positions and in that sense. SNIT seems to have some level of shares in several of the banks in the financial sector. It has gotten to the realization that those sort of investments are not yielding the kind of returns that it should do. So Smith has taken a position to sort of move gradually away from the entire shareholding to where it will just be investing and coming out of it and gets to other sectors of the economy. And one element has been the merchant bank. The merchant bank has been on the drawing board as to its losses over the years, for some time now, some number of years now. Though SNIT has about 89 point something there, the bank has deteriorated to a level that if we all know the state of the bank now, perhaps we may not be making the arguments that we're making. The bank needed a complete injection of capital. But because SNIT has injected monies over the years to this level, it's no more in showing the interest of putting in more money into that bank, because it can't continue to be sinking money there without getting the returns for the fund. It will rather amount to undermining the fund if it continues investing there. And that is why, in the case of Merchant Bank, mismanagement and other factors, including loans granted over the years, has led the bank to a level where now it's only on the support services. The intention is to ensure that a strategic investor is brought to the bank and that SNIT doesn't continue injecting more money there. And I think that is what, strongly that is what has led to the decision to offload shares there to bring about a strategic investor in that level. So many investors, including the first one. I think it's important that people get the real figures properly, because the figures that have been bungling in the media are not really the figures the truth. But then some level of figures are being thrown out there which is not true. Again, there is with the coming into being of the new pensions firm, SNIT is going through some reforms where non-core activities are being moved out. So people should get into the real case of the issue before making the judgment as
right.
with the AFAD.
Right.
Nothing like compromising ourselves. Indeed, we are rather looking at what can really bring about the viability of the fund.
Right. Mr. Samuel, some of us are hearing the state of deterioration of Merchant Bank from you, perhaps for the first time. Many people have expressed worry about the seeming silence of the TUC on many issues affecting the development of the country. Why do you always keep quiet till things get to a situation where it becomes difficult for the ordinary Ghanaians to comprehend the real issues before you come out?
No, on all issues we come out, but in the specific investment like a fund, they are not issues that should be put in public domain. Indeed, if you discuss a bank problems in the bank and in the public domain, it will end up really destroying the bank than to make it good. So we don't bring investment like where we are represented into the public domain.
I'm sorry to cut in rudely, but isn't it better that at times you discuss some of these issues publicly so that people get to appreciate, you know, the dimensions involved and perhaps share their views on some of these things rather than constitute yourself as authority?
If you are represented on a board like GBC board, it's not the board member's duty to be talking about issues in the organization. It's the chief executive and management of the place that should be talking about. But as a board member, you don't come out and start talking about what is happening in GBC when you know that there's a management who has the functional role to be informing. So they are quite different. If you're on the board, you don't come out, we report to our constituencies, but you don't tell the whole public it is the responsibility of the organization. In the case of this merchant bank, our quietness is not because we are quiet and compromising. Indeed, organized labor is holding various meetings because there is a whole lot of untruth and half-truths being peddled out. Organized labor is really getting itself involved in the whole process of acquisition. It's a technical thing that we're doing, and before you come out, you should know. Beyond that, because the issue is in court, people went to court immediately. If it's in court, if you are coming out as an institution, you should be very careful that you don't say things that can lead to contempt. So our legal people were advising us not to be coming out, particularly with things that will be undermining the issues in court. Indeed, organized labor has held 2-3 meetings where the management of state has been invited. Another meeting is going to be underway in a few days. And after that, we are coming to state our position clearly as to what is the future of the sale of the Smith and of the merchant bank. Indeed, what has been done at the level of the board is Bank of Ghana, which will do the due diligence of whether Fortis, who and who are behind Fortis, who and who, that is the responsibility. The internal due diligence was done by Smith, but the major due diligence will have to be done by the regulator. And when that one is done, that is what we are looking at. And indeed, I can assure you that organized labor, within the shortest possible days ahead, will come out on its real position. When we're doing consultation, it's not only TUC, and TUC can come out when the entire organized labor are really discussing such an issue. And I can assure you that within the shortest time, the position of organized labor on the sale of Merchant Bank will be known, made known to the public.
Right, Mr. Asamoah, but are you not worried that the new investors will only collect about 30% of the debt owned by Merchant Bank?
You know, if you look at it, what it means is that the two main investors that have come on board, the first round, the figure they say they were bringing is $140 million. They talked about not having anything to do with the debt. Now, in that case, Smith will still have to pay about additional $100 million. The $140 million will not come to Smith. It will still stay in the merchant bank. Smith will still have to pay money over $100 million before he gets the 25%. And that is, those questions were which led to the termination of that kind of arrangement if other things come. So there are other things which are not reported appropriately, and when it comes out, perhaps, the public will appreciate what, Smith did about whether the choice was good. I think that now what is in contention is who is Fortis, who and who are behind Fortis. These things are what is being done, which should also be largely done by the regulator Bank of Ghana. And that is the issues where organized labor will be coming out in the moment to be able to ask the appropriate questions and point to what should be the way out.
Right.
But the specifics of it, we need to get all the specifics, because it appeared people are debating the issue from uninformed positions. People have even mentioned 199 and other figures which are not even figures on the table. And I would advise that when these things come out, we will appropriately find out whether the decision to offload to Fortis was right. But I think what is now the concern of everybody is that who is Fortis, and we are all interested in finding out who Fortis is.
We definitely have to find out, Mr. Asamoah. But were you part of the board that approved the sale of Merchant Bank
to Fortis? Yes, we were part. We were part, and we cannot run away from. We are part of the subject to Bank of Ghana ratification and other due diligence. As a board, yes, that decision was taken.
Yes. I wish we had time to expatiate, for you to expatiate more on some of the issues. I have a lot of questions here for you, but that is all time will allow us for now. We would like to thank you very much for talking to us. Kufa Asamoah is Secretary General of the TUC. And now to our next story. Decentralization has indeed brought both negative and positive developments to the locals on the ground. On the positive side, governance has gotten closer to the people, but the flip side is not the best to report. Financial irregularities and inefficiencies remain a huge headache at most of the assemblies. For instance, the Auditor General's report for 2012 reveals that more than 111 district assemblies spent a massive 6 billion Ghana cedis on goods and services without any documentary evidence to show prices, quantities, and the nature of the expenditure to substantiate payment. We are joined on the line by Deputy Minister of Local Government, Emmanuel Ajikum, to give his thoughts on the issue. You're welcome, sir.
Thank you very much, member.
You may have seen the Auditor General's report on the assemblies for 2012, and it tells you that there were a lot of infractions, mainly because the coordinating directors and the finance officers paid little attention to the legislations that regulate payments from assemblies coffers. And I'm asking, is it lack of knowledge about the existence of the legislation or disregard for the law?
I wouldn't actually say it's lack of knowledge. I think probably people might have disregarded the law, and for some reasons, there are a whole lot of things that were listed in the auditor's report. which I should say people might have disregarded the law and the regulations that is built around all these things.
But the blame was also put on the state. I don't know if you've read the report, but the blame was also put on the state of affairs and non-performance of the monitoring and supervisory functions of the finance and administration subcommittees of the assemblies. Do you, in the first place, know how these subcommittees are constituted and what prompted the move?
Yes, I know how it's been constituted.
Right. So now, if the assemblies perpetrate such acts, what sanctions are there to ensure it is not repeated?
As I talk to you now, my boss, the Honorable Minister, has actually asked us to look into this report very well, look at it critically, look at the areas that we have problems with. Some of the areas are probably fuel that were not accounted for, impress that were not accounted for, a whole lot of things like documentation that were not right, payment without engineer certificate, and a whole lot of things. So we're looking at all these areas, and the Honorable Minister is aware of this, and he's actually giving us strict instructions on this. He doesn't want to see these things happening again. It's not a matter of we saying that the caption is like they have blown it, but that is not the reality. Some of them are not like people have actually blown the money, but it's a matter of they're not using the right procedures, not go by the law or not go by the procedures that they are supposed to. And this is what I will say. But the minister is really working on it. We're actually trying to categorize it and see the areas that were so bad, the areas that people need to work on and those things. The minister is sending a strong signal to all the metropolitan municipal district chief executives that, look, guys, you need to sit up.
Right. Mr. Ajekun, to allude to your statement, they may not have blown the money. Nevertheless, what measures you are saying that the minister doesn't want to see some of these things happening again? What measures are you putting in place? That is the point, to ensure.
That's why I'm saying that we're trying to put the areas together. For example, impress not being accounted for, certificates that we're trying to... But the Honorable Minister has said that he's sending, a strong signal, i.e. he's sending a memo to all metropolitan municipal assemblies that, look, if you purchase something, it has to go through the store. If you have to pay somebody, there has to be an inspection from the engineers, from the coordinating directors, all those who are supposed to inspect it have to do that. You don't have to take an impress and come back and say you haven't retired. These are some of the things, and definitely a strong signal is being sent around. And if you mess it up, I think the minister wouldn't take it, kindly at all.
Right. How should they go, that is assemblies, go about their procurements in order to ensure transparency?
My brother, procurement is a very simple thing. I was a chief executive myself. It's a very simple thing that I don't understand why people shouldn't go by it. You need to do the ads that you're supposed to do. If it's something that you have to do it inwardly, there are procedures, things that people are supposed to do. So sometimes I simply do not understand. For example, I look at a point where it says payment without engineer certificate. Why should a finance officer pay somebody without a certification saying that, look, the job has been done? So it's something that the minister has taken, note of, and definitely I don't think next year we'll have such problems.
Right, Mr. Ajekun, we were looking at whether disregard for the law or lack of knowledge have been responsible for this state of affairs. Is it also that we don't have the competent people in place,
Trust me, we have competent people out there. I wouldn't say we don't have competent. We have good staff, we have coordinating directors, we have finance officers who are on top of the job. But I simply don't understand some of the things that happen. For example, what I've mentioned to you, why pay somebody without the engineer, the technical person giving you the advice that, guys, the job has been done? I don't understand it. And overpayment of contract. There is a contract book which I mean, stipulate the amount of money that has been paid, what needs to be paid. Why do you overpay the contractor? I think, so we are looking at it, and definitely, my brother, I don't think next year we have such problems. I would not be able to say that we wouldn't have, we can totally eradicate it, but definitely it won't have to this stage.
Right. So, Mr. Jikum, could some of them, those who have committed infractions of the law, be prosecuted? Just a warning and say, don't do that again.
No, sure. If definitely you have done something that goes contrary to the law, that if it's being investigated and it goes, I think the law must take it.
Right. Mr. Jikum, just hold on whilst we pick the toss of local government expert and director of studies and research at the Institute of Local Government School at Medina here in Accra, Eric Udru Osai. You're welcome, Eric.
Thank you, my brother.
Good. Eric, you, I'm sure, have done a lot of studies on the local government system and know how they operate. Why would the assembly spend huge amounts from their coffers without documentary evidence, for example?
I think the Honorable Deputy Minister has said it all, that it is not an issue of lack of capacity, because most of the functionaries at the district level have their capacities built. And even before they get to that level, they go through various kinds of training. We have the various laws also guiding them. I think what I can say may have happened had to do with laxity in the internal control systems, because we have an internal auditor in every district assembly. And this internal auditor is expected to monitor the control system. This internal auditor is expected to conduct an internal audit of the systems and the processes and the transactions of every district assembly on a quarterly basis. The reports should highlight various weaknesses. So early warning signs would have to be indicated in this particular report, so that management of the assembly can put in place appropriate measures to prevent it from occurring. It seems to me that this bit is a little bit weak. The second bit had to do with the finance and administration subcommittees of the respective assemblies. We would have to take a second look at the people we put on these committees, especially the chairpersons. This internal control system is a finance matter, and you need somebody who understands financial management to be able to put the system on its toes. That is not to say that the crop of people we have as FNA chairpersons are not the best. They are the best. They are doing wonderful things. But what I'm saying is that we need to step up the game and then make sure that we have qualified people there who put the systems in check.
Right. Are there sanctions to deter repeat of the situation?
Definitely, there are sanctions. In the Financial Administration Act, there are sanctions. In the Local Government Financial Memorandum, there are sanctions. And currently, we have a functional organizational assessment tool which assesses the financial management practices of local government. If it is established that anybody or any institution is culpable, FOAT will deal with you, will deny you of the funds that you needed, and will make sure that you make amends before the funds are released. There are sanctions. Mm. The local government service is also in place to invoke various punitive measures against administrators or technical officers of the assemblies who are found culpable one way or the other. So the sanctions are there.
Right, still on sanctions. If you deprive the assembly of funds, just as you said, who are you depriving, Eric? Is it not the people?
It is the people.
And is that the best?
It is not the best. That is the more reason why I was going to my third point, that we have to step up social accountability. Citizens themselves and the beneficiaries of the services of assemblies should also hold the assemblies accountable and responsible, because they are closer to the action spot. We have put in place systems to ensure that they can walk to the Public Relations and Complaints Committee of the Assembly and demand accountability, basic financial reports, and all of that. If there is a project that is ongoing and you feel you don't understand it, go to your assembly member, let your assembly member understand everything that is happening. Social accountability is one way of putting the system on its toes. But if citizens don't go asking questions, government or the Ministry of Local Government is far from all the district assemblies. So I will use this your medium to encourage each and every Ghanaian to walk to his assembly and then start asking questions about how resources have been utilized.
Eric, I'm not a local government expert, but I just believe that political incursions sort of could also put pressure on some of these assemblies to do what they are not supposed to do.
I'm not sure any technical or professional person would accede to political pressure. Why I'm saying that is because the politics bit is there, but local government functionaries are professionally trained functionaries who are expected to exercise and manage their profession in a very professional manner. No finance officer has never been trained in accounting. Every finance officer is an accountant, and the accounting profession has its own ethics. Every administrator is a professional administrator. Every coordinating director is a professional coordinating director. So if you allow political influence to bear on you to do things that goes against your professional ethics, local government service will sanction you.
Right, Eric, we would want to thank you very much for that. Now let's go back to Mr. Ajikum for his final thought. Mr. Ajikum, I'm sure you are there.
Yes, I'm here, my brother.
Right, let's look at the issue of politics once again. I don't want us to go deep into that because it may have some... Right, now, the issue of pressure, political pressure, does it at times come in?
My brother, like Eric just mentioned, it's nothing to do with political pressure, because I'm looking at the... If you look at the report, it's something like pay not acknowledge receipt. There's no political pressure that says that... don't take receipt from someone. If you look at something like unpresented payment vouchers, will there be any political pressure on that? If somebody tells you you should overpay somebody, I don't think any politician will push that you should overpay someone. There are basic things. I don't think it's something to do with political pressure at all.
Others also believe that some of the politicians have a way of, you know, turning things around so that it will be difficult for any officer to, uncover some of these.
No, my brother, like Eric said, you see there are serious mechanisms or serious things in place that are supposed to do these checks and balances. There's no politician. Politicians are smart. I don't see politicians are people who would just do something who cause just a simple mess. For example, why should a politician come and tell you that we should go and misapply some funds? For what reasons? I don't think those things.
Right. I don't have to go into...
For example, SNIT deduction. Will a politician come and tell you that you shouldn't deduct SNIT? I don't think...
Right, Mr. Jukim, I don't want us to go deep into that. But then you also agree with me that some politicians, perhaps I should have put it in that way, they are human beings as well. And you know what, some can do. But let me ask you this one. Several assemblies also recorded deficits. What are they doing wrong? Is it chop-chop or inefficiency?
I don't think it's to do with chop-chop. Because when you talk about chop-chop, we cannot substantiate that there was any chop-chop anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be proven. Then we can say that there is chop-chop.
Right. I hope I'm not pushing you to the wall, but these are issues that the ordinary Ghanaian would want to know because of the state of affairs of the country. So we want to thank you very much for talking to us, Mr. Ajikum.
Thank you very much, my brother.
Mr. Emmanuel Ajikum is Deputy Minister of Local Government. And now to our next story. It is the hope of every parent or guardian to see his or her ward pass an examination and qualify to the next level or next level of education. For some parents and guardians in the Sisalawes district of the Upper West region, the same cannot be said of the ward's education, especially when it comes to the BECE results. Eight schools in the district scored 0% in the 2013 BECE. Another worrying trend is that for the past 4 years, BECE results fell below 30%. The 2012 results was 29%, while 2013 is 15%. The Sisalawes District Assembly is worried about the poor BECE results and is devising strategies to address the challenge. Moses Lurie is the DC for Sisalawes. You're welcome. Hello, Moses.
Hello.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
So how worried is the Assembly over the standard of education in the district?
Thank you very much, and good evening to your cherished listeners. As you just preambled it, it is quite worrisome for a parent to take your child through the educational ladder to the point that you expect the child to come out with success, and the result is the opposite. And indeed, the Assembly, who is the major stakeholder role we ought to lead the development process for the area. Every parent looks up to us. If the results are positive, we take glory. If the results are not so good, then everybody looks up to the assembly. And indeed, we are so worried about the city.
Right. So what could be the... Okay, continue with your point.
And that is why we think that we need to put heads together, bring all stakeholders on board, parents, teachers, head teachers, security supervisors, NGOs and all development partners, so that we debate the matter at all the necessary levels and structures and find a possible strategy. I've directed that the director sits down with people and come out with challenges and suggestions so that we will look at it and make our input to see how we can reverse the trend.
We are told eight schools in the district scored 0% in the 2013 BC. That is indeed worrying. What could be the factors for the poor standard of education?
Yes, it's true that eight schools scored 0% in the BEC examination. There are a number of factors that affect the outcome of the BEC results. Among them has to do with a rapid expansion in educational infrastructure, where the basic composite education requires that within 5 kilometers radius there should be a school. So over the years, government has done very well to meet this target. In Sisala West, for instance, schools have shrunk and established all over communities. Indeed, we have only 3 communities plus schools. This, however, does not come with the needed expansion improvement in terms of teachers. The teacher situation gets worse as the number of schools expands. We have a lot of infrastructural improvement over the past decade. And indeed, in the very last few 6 years, we have had over between 20 to 30 new schools coming up with infrastructure taking care. But that is not the case when it comes to the number of teachers. As we talk now, the district needs between 350 and 400 teachers to be able to fill all classes. When you put the teacher people ratio, which years holds between 35 teacher, the average number of people in the classroom in Sisala, well, because it's rural, is about 10. So when you look at it with the way GES poses teacher, you think that the teacher situation is fine, but actually when you go to the teacher people, the average number of teachers in each class, it makes the case so worrisome, and that is the major problem.
Right.
Among other causes will include supervision, and then also you have about 3 teachers running from kindergarten to GSS3, and among the 3 teachers, either all of them are students themselves learning for improvement, a professional advancement, or 2 or 3 of them are learning themselves. And of course, with the globalization, parents, teachers, and the people themselves, we have rural electrification covering almost 89% of the district. But instead of children paying to learn and make good use of the light, they would rather stand by street lights in the night and around 2 years.
Good. Right, Mr. Lurie, is it the first time, the schools are scoring 0%, or it's been persistent for some time?
No, it's consistent. The first ever BEC exam that was taken in the district after it was selected from Sisala district was 2008. The percentage there was 52.1%. In 2009, it came to 41.59%. In 2010, we scored 18.9 0%. And in 2011, it was 28.10%. In 2012, it was 29.7%. And this year, we had 15.8%. So the trend has been depreciating right from when we started the examination in Sisala West District.
Right. So how is the District Assembly dealing with these issues?
Yes. Of course, what we are doing now is one way. We want to appeal, use this forum to appeal to all stakeholders in education, NGOs, all like-minded people to come to our aid, either with ideas, technical advice or support or financial or whatever it means it may be. Apart from that, we also looking at holding consultative meetings to debate, to discuss the issues so that we can identify the challenges and then the suggestions and the way forward.
Right.
The Sisala West District Assembly also has an educational scholarship package where we are supporting teacher trainees to go to teacher training colleges bonded to come back to the assembly. The number keep on increasing. Last year we had 16, it moved to 42 last year. This year we are targeting about 150 teacher trainees to support to continue to fill the teacher gap. And the MP has also introduced another package where we have brilliant but needy students. We call it a Sisala West Educational Fund to aid parents that actually have a few educational challenges to support them to send their children to school and
right.
help them out of the challenges.
Mr. Luru, we wish you could continue with these laudable interventions. We'd want to thank you very much, but we hope that their trend will definitely be reversed. Moses Luri is the DCE for Sisala West. We now go for a quick break. Also joining me on the line is Valentine Domaple, the District Director of Education for Sisala West. You're welcome, sir.
Thank you very much.
Right. So what have you identified as reasons for the poor standard of education at the basic level in the district?
Well, I thank you for giving me this opportunity, and I also want to welcome my listeners to this program. Indeed, what the DCE has said is true. The results have been fluctuating, and it's not anything one can put in one basket. The problem is multifaceted. But what I can say for now is that from even the recent headcounts, the district has only about 238 professional teachers to man the 70 schools and above. So you go to some schools, you cannot even get one professional teacher. And I wouldn't be surprised that those schools that score zero are those schools that do not even have a professional teacher.
Right. It has been observed that in addition to the few teachers in the classroom, some of them are pursuing courses in distance education. It therefore affects the number of hours.
That is one of the issues I would have come to. Because even the 238 we have, a good number of them, over 70% are pursuing the distance programs. And these are within the academic year. So when they go for these distance then, and the classrooms are left vacant.
But Mr. Domaple, why do you have to give them that leave when you know that you have a deficit in terms of teachers?
Yeah, interestingly, I don't give them that leave. I don't give them because I know that it is only the scholarship secretariat that grants such people leave with pay within the academic year. So for those that go without approval, state leave approval, sanctions are put on them. They are not supposed to go, but yet they go. And I think that Sisala West is one of the that has the highest number of professional teachers going for the distance learning program.
But has the district directorate of education ever gathered the courage to sanction any teacher who is found to be ineffective?
Recently, in June, about 17 of them went to Winneba. I placed sanctions on their salary, and I got calls. I got calls from everywhere, MPs, chiefs, whoever, branding me wicked. I don't have a heart. I'm heartless. Why should I place salary embargoes on teachers who want to further their studies? And so these are some of the issues. So you apply the sanctions according to the GS policy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested in that. So when you were branded wicked and so on and so forth, what did you do? Did you backtrack?
I don't backtrack. I stick to my guns because that is why I'm there. I went to the district with a vision. And so anybody who wants to come in the way of my vision, I stand against it. So, well, they often have their own ways out because we are now in a world of technology.
Mm.
So if I put somebody's name on ban because the person has not followed the right procedure and the fellow that class finds a way of getting the salary, that one I cannot control.
Right. So what has been some of the solutions of your directory to the challenges confronting education in the district?
Well, since I came there, I've often talked about the issue of training more teachers, getting teachers accommodated in that remote area where in some communities you cannot even get a decent house for a teacher. You know, motivating the teacher. And all these things we have tried and tried as much as possible to get them on. It's not been easy. I know the assembly also, they have their own challenges. But I have my vision.
All right. We would want to thank you very much for talking to us. Valentine Domaplay, the District Director of Education for Sisala West. And Eric Ayaba is the Upper West Unit Manager of Plan Ghana. But we are told he's not there at the moment. How does the representative of the people of Sisala West in Parliament feel about the poor basic educational level result in his constituents? Alhaji Amidu Suleimani is the MP for Sisala West and Minister of Roads and Highways. Alhaji, salamu alaikum.
Maalim salam, my brother.
Alhaji, you're obviously not a happy person. I can see that. When it comes to the poor BC results being recorded in your constituency, how come your constituency is faced with this poor result, which is not good for human resource development?
Certainly not, my brother. It's so sad that year in and out we are recording these bad results in the Sisala West district. Of course, the Sisala West district was carved out of the SOF Sisala district with headquarters in Golu. And being a new district, we've had a number of challenges, particularly a lack of trained teachers. The last time we checked, we have a deficit of about 400 trained teachers in the district. But that is not the excuse for this bad performance. I recall we all attended school in communities there and the trees, and we did where we did and what we are now. There are too many factors come into play, and we all have to sit up and address the issues. While the teachers have a role to play, I strongly think that parents cannot just leave the training of our kids just to the teachers alone. When they come home in the evening, even though most of us there are not literate, we should be concerned about what our children do when they return from school. Fortunately, my Sisala West district is one of the districts with a very high penetration of electricity supply, so almost every community there has electricity, I can tell you. Mm. And I think we are not utilizing it well. The children rather want to stand under the light, play around and all that. I think we need to set up and direct them properly.
Right.
I on my own, I have identified human resource as one of the main areas of concern when I was campaigning to come to Parliament, and I made it a point that I will concentrate a lot on that. I think that this resource will have to look at different ways of how to address the issue. on the higher scale, we've tried to create a fund to support those who finish secondary school and went beyond. But I think now we have to look back and see how we can support maybe security officers to ensure they go around and supervise teaching and learning in our classrooms in the district. I think it has been one of my main concerns. I joined politics in my constituency. I've been talking about that. I think we'll need to settle the stakeholders and see how we can address the issue.
Right, Alhaji, you are MP for the area. And minister, let me say, perhaps with a big portfolio. We are not talking about you giving them roles, but what are you doing urgently? Because this is a serious case to reverse the trend.
As I indicated to you, we have started, we didn't start with the lower one, we started above those from secondary school where they will go next, or those entering secondary school. We've actually set up an educational fund in the district, and I on my own, before even the common fund, I mobilized some money and set up the fund. And when the common fund came, I made them to do some transfers into it and set up a committee to see how they can support reliant and needy students. But as I'm saying, we need to address the lower level in a different manner with stakeholders. I think I would like to engage the education authorities and the community leaders, and we'll see how we'll go about it. I can immediately say that we can support the security supervisors with motorbikes. We can do that easily. There are just, we have 5 secrets. We can even support them with motorbikes to carry out supervision. But it is a collective responsibility. It's not just what you do. It's what others will do, even with the support. That is what is very critical. That's why we have to engage many more stakeholders on this issue.
Right, Alhaji, we want to thank you very much for talking to us tonight. Alhaji Hamidu Sulemani is the MP for Sisala West and the Minister of Roads and Highways. There has been a temporary lull on the political front, particularly after the Supreme Court verdict, but it looks like there are those who should stir the harvest nest when things do not go their way in the party they belong to. A youth group within the NDC Reform for Youth Empowerment is warning the party leadership to immediately implement the constitutional reforms within the party. A statement by the group and signed by its convener, Ebenezer Akutu, called on the leadership to hasten the reforms aimed at expanding the electoral college of the party. The statement said the silence by the leadership after collating views about the party's electoral college system is stirring apprehension among grassroots supporters at the constituency level. Mr. Ebenezer Akutu has joined us on the line. You're welcome, Eben.
Thank you, my brother.
So what are the concerns of your group?
No, actually, the Reform for Youth Empowerment is a voice of the grassroots. We carry the spirit of the grassroots. Let me tell you something. Through the leadership and the struggle and the toil of the grassroots, we have transformed the NDC into an electoral winning machine. In the Fourth Republic, we have won 4 out of the 6 major presidential elections in Ghana. And we have transformed Ghana to a large extent. Yet we have done all this without any recognition. At this material time, we are asking the leadership to honor the full soldiers so that we can be in a position to provide a greater leadership and vision for our party. Because we have realized that after major elections, we are not part of the governance. There is no accountability in the party. The people who go and form the government alienate the grassroots. So this reform, when it came up, was actually the call by the full soldiers, so that we can be empowered and be in the position to not only influence leadership in our party, but also to influence the future of our country. That we should not only be a tool only to win an election, but we must also be a tool not only to win an election, but also to form a government and influence government. By so doing, collectively, we will secure our future. That is why we are saying that any attempt to deny the grassroots that empowerment will be a tragedy, and we will not take it kindly,
And we are saying that, and we support the call of the founder that this will lead to an electoral defeat in 2016 because it will lead to demotivation of the grassroots.
Right, right, Mr. Akutu, you others believe you sound, you know, from the statement that some of us have read, you used adjectives that sound a bit militaristic, tragedy you've just used. Have you contacted leadership of the party to find out what is causing the delay rather than perhaps resort to some sort of defiance? You've also used positive defiance if your calls are not heeded to. Is that the best way, without consulting the leadership of the party, to find out what actually could be causing the delay?
My brother, let me tell you something. It is easy for the leadership of the party to engage the grassroots, but it is virtually impossible for the grassroots to engage the leadership. That tells you the fundamental flaw in the structure. Here's the need for this constitutional reform. I'm repeating myself again. They will not deny it. It is easy for the grassroots to engage, it is easy for the leadership of the NDC to engage the grassroots, but it is impossible and it is quite difficult for the grassroots to engage the leadership because of what? Structural failure.
We are saying that
on the question of whether we have consulted the leadership, who is to consult? If you go to the party headquarters, you cannot find a chairman. You cannot find a secretary. You make appointment after appointment after appointment. As for the constituency leadership, it is dead.
Right, right. There are more issues I want us to talk about. But the others believe you are being pushed by some faceless elements within the party.
My brother, let me tell you something. That will be the greatest insult to the grassroots. This group has been formed from a core from the 275 constituency of the NDC. That we won't, this reform can be equated to a messiah. This reform can be equated to a messiah. It is the redemption of the soul of the full soldiers and the NDC.
Right. Mr. Akutu, just hold on whilst...
I want to make a point that...
No, I'll come back to you. Don't worry. Just stay on the line and then let's take the toss of Deputy General Secretary of the NDC, Kofi Adams. Kofi, you're welcome. Hello? Hello, Ms. Adams, can you hear me? Hello? Hello, Ms. Adams? Right, so let's go back to Mr. Akutu. So, Mr. Akutu, you can continue with your submission.
So, my brother, I want to make it that any attempt to belittle our struggle for internal reforms in the NDC, saying that somebody is sponsoring and somebody is sponsoring, it is a pure diversionary tactic by interest groups who are beneficiary of the president's electoral status quo, who are beneficiary of the current electoral status quo in the NDC, that these are people they can manipulate for them to attain regional, national executive position at the disadvantage of the grassroots. So many of them are afraid of this reform that the grassroots is calling.
Right, Mr. Akutu, we are told Mr. Adams is on the line, so just hold on whilst we go quickly to him. Mr. Adams, you're welcome.
Thank you. Good evening to your list.
Right, good evening. I'm sure you've been listening to Mr. Akutu. Is this group known within the party?
The party has the youth wing, the women's wing, the Zongo Caucus, the United Cadets Front, the parliamentary wing. These are the wings that are known in the party. Any other grouping is just established as part of the clubs that are done to help support the cause of the party.
So this is not a mainline group within the party?
I don't know of any such
Right, but listening to the concerns they are raising, are they not legitimate?
So these are things that are already being done. That is why himself is referring to reforms. If we were just to follow the constitutional provision, then we will go along with what has been happening in the past. It is the same leadership together with the president that thought that there's a need to do certain things and open up. That is why we have to suspend the process that have begun. So how can the people who themselves thought that, look, let's put the constitution now aside and let's subject it to a review but before going to an election, be the people who don't want the reforms to happen. This can be the case. So he should just give him the case. Maybe he can urge that, look, let's do things first. That is their wish. But when you are doing something new, you need to take your time and make sure it works and works very well. Some of the branches have already done their elections before this strong idea of possible reforms came up. So now we are in the consultative stage. What do we do to the already conducted branches? All this has been done. The issue of biometric registration project is just about to begin. And we need the data to be able to implement certain reforms if they work. So it doesn't just take a stroke of pen for things to happen. It needs to be done orderly. And when you talk about leadership, leadership is not only those that are national. Leadership include even the branch level. The party has got levels and structures. There's a branch executive. Indeed, there used to be a cell before the branch. Then branches within an electoral area forms the ward. So you have the ward coordinators. Then you have constituency executives. Then when you have more than one constituency in a district, you have a district coordinating committee. Then you have the regional executive, and then you have the national executive. So there are various levels of responsibility.
Right.
But sometimes people tend to think that only national officers should do all the job. I agree with them if they say that, look, give indication, give direction, let us know what is happening. The year is ending. What is the program on for maybe the first quarter, second quarter, line up for elections? When you are raising those concerns, yes, they are okay, but we must raise them such that not like doing it intending to possibly run down one person or the other. They are really genuine concerns. He is concerned about the party. He wants the party to continue to win one election after the other. But this idea also of people being used and they are not consulted or involved in government. Look, all of us can be involved in government. Some will get it today, others who got it yesterday, some
right.
will get it tomorrow. It cannot be everybody, all the millions of NDC supporters being in government. That is not...
Right, Mr. Adam, we wish you could react to all the concerns raised. We'd want to thank you very much for your contribution. Kofi Adams is Deputy General Secretary of the NDC. Now, Mr. Kutu, briefly, because we are running out of time, we are told your group is not known within the party.
Yes. That's a statement of from our senior colleague. But there's always a beginning to every group. And as he himself mentioned, there are many groups within the NDC. But whenever they tell you that they don't know a group, then that is not formed by a godfather or a godmother. They will not know because this is a grassroots movement. This is a grassroots movement. So if he says that he doesn't know of a group, it's a statement of fact because the grassroots move is not formed by any godfather or any godmother. It is a
right, Mr. Kutu, we'll give you the opportunity another day. We'd want to thank you very much for talking to us. So now let's pick some of your text messages. Jensen Rashid from Wa says, it would be laudable if there exist private, external and renowned auditors to audit vigorously into our various MMDAs because there exist much misapplications and misappropriations in the areas thereby retarding progress. I'm making a passionate appeal to advisors at the presidency and local government to desist from collecting bribes from MMDCs and put serious issues that will unite the country. From Gideon in Wadula Saboba district, the standard of education is falling in this country because GES is encouraging the rule of mass promotion. And from Lodina Dogu from Jirapa, the people of Jirapa in the Upper West region deserve a technical high school. I am through this medium appealing to government to, as a matter of urgency, come to our aid. And Apollo from Tumu says, I wish all Ghanaians, especially Christians, a Merry Christmas and prosperous New Year. From Jensen Rashid, public-private partnership is very crucial because it is a prerequisite for sustainable development and should not be seen as an afterthought in every developmental agenda as far as Ghana is concerned. From Victor Kudoji from Hope Polytechnic, I'm highly surprised and completely flown out of proportion, that members within the NPP are dying out over the sale of Merchant Bank, how they forgot so soon the sale of Ghana Telecom, now Vodafone, the controversial sale of the oil drillship, and the diversion of state properties. And Commander from Accra, Newtown, the NPP as a political party has no moral right to talk about corruption. Where is our Ghana Airways properties? Who bought it? And from Koje Kings from Cape Coast, as we acknowledge the need for all leaders to follow Mandela's footsteps, we need to remind former presidents like Kaunda, Rawlings, and Kofo to learn how to give their parties peace to rule as Mandela did. That was your text messages. So that's how we draw the curtains on today's edition of the program. We are back same time tomorrow. Our producers have been Christopher Sidu, Edmond Tete, Bright Agama, Felix Kofi, Celestine Avi, Agatha Asamoah, our summarizer Baba Otu, and our technician.